So we're reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, the chapter entitled Stay High Forever. October 13, the Village Voice ran four large photographs of the Love Pageant Rally. The article stated, the backbone of the celebration was the mantras, holy chants, from the Sanskrit Bhagavad Gita, and for 3 hours it became like a boat on a sea of rhythmic chanting, led by 15 disciples of Bhakti Vedanta Swami, who operates from a storefront on 2nd Avenue. The mantras ebbed and flowed with the rhythm of drums, flutes, and soda cup tambourines. October 18th. It was Sunday, and again they went to Thompson Square Park. Swamiji played the bongo as before, striking the drum head deftly as ever, his nimble fingers creating drum rolls as he sat on the rug in the autumn afternoon. His authentic melodic voice recited the prayers to the previous spiritual masters, Gaur Kishore Bhakti Vinod Bhakti Siddhanta, the centuries-old disciplic succession of which he was the living representative now in the 1960s. In this remote part of the world, he sang their names in duty, deference, and love as their servant. He sat surrounded by his American followers under the tall oak tree amid the maze-like fences of the park. And the same magic occurred. This time, the hippies came by with more ease and familiarity. Allen Ginsberg came again, and 100 others gathered as Prabhupada loudly chanted, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. So, Srila Prabhupada goes to Thompson Square Park, and he's chanting on a bongo drum. You know what a bongo drum is? You know that African drum that they take out on the Harinam? Well, that's like a big-sized bongo drum. If you shrink that down to about this big, that's what a bongo drum is. Right? A bongo. It's from South America. You know what a bongo drum is? No. Okay, so Prabhupada didn't have a mridanga. He just had a bongo drum. And he was chanting with the devotees who had just become devotees. They joined in July. That's when he opened up his 22nd Avenue in July. Right? And this is October. July, August, September, October. They're 4 months in the movement. That's all. And they're with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada spread out a rug, you know? And they sat down in the park. And you can imagine, nobody's ever seen anything like this. Ever. People chanting on a bongo drum and dancing. Right? So the hippies, one time Srila Prabhupada came in the airport, he arrived, and the reporters came in the lounge of the airport, and they were asking Srila Prabhupada questions. Right? So they asked him, "What's your opinion of the hippies?" One reporter asked him, "What's your opinion?" And he said back to the reporter, "I think you know better than me." And everybody laughed. And then he said, "Something extraordinary. Something extraordinary." Because the hippies, they didn't have any jobs. The men had long hair down to here, right? And they had blue jeans that had patches on them, right? With the peace sign. And the girls were like that too. Blue jeans, t-shirts, moving here and there, some headbands, right? And their only business was to have a good time, right? Their philosophy was about life. If it feels good, then do it. That was their philosophy. If it feels good, do it. So, you know, they'd get up in the morning and they could sleep anywhere. Friend's house, in the park, under the bridge, any place. They called it, sleeping was called crashing out. We crashed. Right? And then during the day, they would look for some ganja to smoke. Right? Either at a friend's place, or they would buy some, or they'd get a whole lot and sell it and make some money and buy some more. Right? This was their life. Right? Nothing about work. That wasn't part of the curriculum. It was all about what they felt was having fun. But when they met the devotees, they understood that here was the ultimate fun. Right? You go to the park and have musical instruments and chant, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna." Nothing against the Tulsa leaves in the water, but sometimes it's difficult to drink them and talk at the same time. So Srila Prabhupada said about the hippies are our best customers. The hippies are our best customers. Why? Because they would come and they would listen. They would dance. They would chant. They would buy incense. And they loved to take prasadam. Right? So the hippies were our best customers, Srila Prabhupada said. So here, just the movement, quote unquote, has just started. And Srila Prabhupada is in Thompson Square Park in New York. And he's sitting on a rug with his, you know, new followers, and they're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And Allen Ginsberg, at that time in America, was something like, you know, he was famous. He was quite a famous personality, like Rabindra Tagore, famous poet in Calcutta. That was 100 years ago. But Allen Ginsberg was something like that. He was a very famous poet. Okay? So to have him sit with Srila Prabhupada and chant Hare Krishna would bring attention of certain persons. Right? So, Srila Prabhupada, Satguru Maharaj talks about the magic. Right? There's magic. Whenever the kirtan goes out, there's a magic. What's the Hindi word? Jadu. Jadu. There's a magic that happens, right? Magic is something that happens that's unexplainable. You can't really explain how it happened. You know it happened, but you can't explain how it happened. If somebody makes a card come out of their finger, right? It's magic, right? How he did that? So kirtan, chanting with Srila Prabhupada, was magic. Why? Because everyone would become happy. How? No explanation. It's just words. Hare Krishna. Just words. Right? But everyone become happy. And not only that, the people walking by, just by hearing that, those words, they would also become happy. So the devotees would feel that there was some magic that was happening. So Satsrut Maharaj explains, the same magic occurred. So now, even years and years later, it's not that that same magic is not available. The same magic is there. If one thinks of Srila Prabhupada and tries to enter into the Harinam Sankirtan, right, with a sincere purpose to try to hear the holy name and spread the holy name, the same magic. It's not different magic. It's not any less magic. It's the same magic, right? One of the hundreds who came by, some stayed briefly and then left. Some decided to listen and chant for a few minutes, or even for the entire afternoon. And a few, very few, marked their encounter with the Swami as an unforgettable change in their lives. Actually, the Harinam Sankirtan is the only thing that is really important. And people know that. They do all kinds of other things, but they actually know one of the most important things is chanting in the heart. But they're in a lot of maya. They're in a lot of illusion. So it's difficult for them to stay focused on that because there's so much sense objects and sense gratificatory activities going on. In St. Louis, where I'm from, there's a place where the devotees go on Harinam. It's called Del Mar. It's a street in St. Louis. And there's a lot of movie theaters and restaurants and different things. So it's a night place. People go there. So the devotees would go there and chant on Harinam. Now, and there's not so many devotees, so for a long time, they didn't go on Harinam. Nobody went out. But they used to go out every Friday night or Saturday night or Wednesday night. They would go to Del Mar. But for a long time, they never went. So after a long time, we got together a Harinam party. Wasn't so many devotees, maybe 6, 7, 8 devotees, and we went on Harinam. So as soon as we started chanting, one person, older person, came up and said, "Where have you guys been? We haven't seen you for so long. It's really good that you've come out here tonight." So we didn't know who that guy was. He didn't know who we were. But he knew this chanting was happiness. It had some magic to it. So when he saw the devotees out there chanting, he was happy. He was glad to see them. So like that, so many interesting things happen on Harinam. But unfortunate as we are, we think there's something else that's important that we have to do. And Harinam is, well, it's important, but, you know, not so important. There's other things we can do. Another nice experience, same place, Del Mar, St. Louis, we're out on Harinam. And people are walking by, going to the restaurants or whatever they're doing. And this one man who has a small, maybe 4-year-old kid, 4 years, just a little kid. He's walking along holding the kid's hand. So the kid comes in front of the Harinam party and he becomes mesmerized. The child cannot take his eyes off the devotees doing kirtan. It's just like this. So his father, you know, he's one of those patient fathers, you know? Some fathers are really impatient with their kids. They say, come on. But this was a patient father. He said, he just let the kid stare at the devotees and, you know. And then the father started to get a little impatient. You know, he wanted to go to the restaurant, wherever he wanted to go. But the kid was completely locked into the kirtan and the devotees. So he tugged him a little bit, but he didn't move. Tugged him a little more. He was a really patient father, you know. So then finally he picked the kid up and he left. So we thought that was kind of magical, you know, that this kid was totally absorbed in the kirtan. Then after about 20 minutes, the father came back, he's holding the child, and he tells the devotees, he told one devotee, he said, my boy says he can feel your love. This 4-year-old little kid told his father that I can feel their love. So the father had to come back and tell us that. And the devotee replied, well, we can feel his love too. So the Sankirtan movement, it has so much magic to it. It's actually all about love. The fact that the devotees are chanting the holy name of Krishna, it's a loving exchange with the conditioned souls. It's giving them Krishna. It's engaging them in Krishna's service. Just like the gopis. The gopis want other gopis to serve Krishna. They push them forward and they make tasteful arrangements for the other gopis to enjoy with Krishna. So in this Harinam Sankirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that mellow of Ras Lila descend into the Kali Yuga. It descends into the Kali Yuga and in the form of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. The devotees of the Lord engage the conditioned souls in the service of Krishna by allowing them to hear the holy name of Krishna. So isn't that a magic thing? It's magic. Bob Correns was looking for the Swami. He was walking with his stylishly dressed wife and 2-year-old son, Eric. Bob was 26 years old and worked as a supervisor in the New York City Welfare Department. He had grown up in Washington, D.C., where he had met his wife. He had a full face, a broad forehead, and a clear voice and steady eyes. Bob, after I graduated from George Washington University, I decided to go straight to what I thought was the heart of the material world, New York City, to seek out whatever was the highest truth. I ended up living around the corner from the East Village head shop. Bob didn't think his job as a social worker really helped anyone. His clients, over the years, seemed to maintain their same outlook and habits. He and his wife frequented the West Village coffee houses, had attended lectures by Leary and Albert on expanded consciousness, and had taken part in a recent peace march. Bob had come to feel that his aspiration for a master's degree and a better apartment were unfulfilling and he was looking for something more. Bob, I heard about the I Ching, a book that was supposed to chart a person's course in life. So I got someone to do a reading for me. The direction was, push forward through darkness. I took it as a good sign, a spiritual sign. Then I purchased the East Village Other, and I saw the article entitled, Save Earth Now. There was a picture of the Swami. I had read in a book by a Sikh teacher that there could be no higher knowledge without a spiritual master. Every morning on his way to work, Bob used to pass by the Swami's storefront. Curious, he stopped once and peered into the window, only to find an empty room with some straw mats on the floor and one of the Swamiji's boys. Oh, these people are Buddhist, he thought. The door had been opened, and the boy came over and invited him in. No thanks, he said, thinking. I don't want anything to do with Buddhism. And he went on to his job. In a head shop one day, he picked up one of Swami's Bhagavatams and looked through it. But he thought it was too advanced, so he put it back down. After he read the article in the East Village Other, his interest increased. He thought that today might be the last Sunday of chanting in the park before the cold weather came, and so he went to the park hoping to find the Swami and his chanters. His wife was beside him, pushing Eric in a stroller. When he heard the ching-ching of the hand symbols and a chorus of rhythmic chanting from the south side of the park, thinking it must be the Swami, he followed the sound while his wife took Eric to play on the swings. Alone now, Bob drew closer, moving into the crowd until he could see the kirtan party and the Swami sitting under the tree. Bob stood among a crowd of hundreds unnoticed. Everything is happening because of me, thought 19-year-old Judy Koslovsky. Everything I see is my own creation, and I am the supreme. Everything is mine. As the thought of being God obsessed her, Judy forgot her father and everything else. She was confused. If I am God, why can't I control everything, and why am I so fearful on LSD? Judy was a student in the City College of New York, majoring in art and history. She was taking guitar lessons from the Reverend Gary Davis, the blues singer and Christian preacher, who was teaching her the art of sad soul music. Today, however, under the influence of LSD, she had the overwhelming impression that she was God. She had a fight with her father, who seemed cold and distant to her and couldn't understand her, and she had left her parents' home in the Bronx and traveled downtown. She was going to visit a friend, and Thompson Square Park happened to be on the way. When she reached the park, the kirtan was going on, but she couldn't see much because of the crowd. She weaved her way in closer until she could see some men, one shaven-headed, several bearded, dancing with upraised hands, and in the center, she saw the Swami, sitting on the rug, playing his drum. Dan Clark was 25, thin, intense, horn-rimmed, bespeckled, and avant-garde filmmaker, and his film was entitled Rebirth. He was a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War and was working at a home for children as alternative government service. He had been a member of the SDS, and the War Resisters League. He had been arrested during a protest demonstration, and he had been suspended 1 week for his job for wearing a peace button and a black armband. He was into Buddhism, but he had lately been adding a little psychedelic seasoning. "Everything is nothing and nothing is everything," was his slogan. And he would go around chanting it like a mantra. But he was feeling that, at least psychologically, he added a devotional tonic. His voidistic meditation was getting stale. Dan had come to the park today looking for the Swami and the chanting he had read about in the village other, East Village other. He had seen the Swami before. One evening, a few months back, he had been waiting for a bus across the street from the Swami's storefront. He was on the way to a rehearsal for a mixed media show, and his friend had gone into Sam's luncheonette for a moment. When he noticed in the storefront an orange-robed Indian man with a shaven head was lecturing to a small group of young people, Dan. When I saw him, I imagined myself walking across the street, going into the storefront, sitting down, and renouncing all worldly connections. But I thought to myself, it's only my imagination. After all, I'm married, and I'm on my way to rehearsal, and I don't know anything about the Swami anyway. So my friend and I got on the bus. But Dan lived only a few blocks away from the storefront, and now and then he would pass by. Once he had stood for several minutes on the sidewalk looking at the cover of the Srimad Bhagavatam taped onto the window. Dan. It showed an oval lotus with planets around it, and right when I was introduced to the idea of spiritual sensuality, and when I saw the painting of Lord Chaitanya and his associates in the window, that really threw me. I thought, yes, this is what I need. Juice. Dan and his wife walked the paved pathway through the park. He was looking around for the Swami, but he didn't really know what to look for. He expected to see robes and hear Buddhist-style chanting, but he couldn't find anything. He had given up his search and was wandering around to see what musicians were there when he noticed a big crowd gathered around what he figured must have been some musicians. He was attracted by the beat of their music, a chiming, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3, a simple rhythm with a kind of flamboyance, a very magnetic. He saw an occasional upraised arm above the crowd, and he thought there must be flamingo dancing going on inside the circle. He then got wind of a drifting melody, certainly not flamingo, which accompanied the beat, and this attracted him further. He approached closer and closer, making his way through the crowd. Then he saw people chanting and others dancing and waving their arms in what he took to be a blend of American Indian and Asian dancing. It looked like something from a long-forgotten era. Dan decided that this must be the Hare Krishna group. But there were no robes, just a regular dress of the Lower East Side. And where was the Swami? Then he saw him sitting inconspicuous, playing a little drum. His eyes were closed, and his brow was knit with concentration. Dan. The Swami wasn't calling attention to himself, and at first I didn't attribute any importance to an elderly Indian man's sitting off to one side. He didn't seem to have any special function in the chanting, but it gradually dawned on me who he was. He was the same Swami I had read about in the paper and seen in the storefront. After a while, he spoke, but I couldn't hear him. Still, I was impressed that he was a very modest person, not interested in getting himself up on a pedestal. He didn't go strutting around, but was still with inner peace, strength, and knowledge. So, these are some impressions of different devotees that saw the chanting in 26 Second Avenue or Thompson Square Park. Bob Corin's, I think, is Rupanuga. Judy is Jadarani. I'm not sure who Dan is. But they later on became devotees. And this was their first impressions, how they came in contact with Srila Prabhupada and the Kirtan party. So, it had such an impression that it changed their lives. That's how powerful the Kirtan party is. So we should always try to participate in the Sankirtan party, because it's the magic for us, and it's also the magic for other people. And when we do Kirtan, if we do it with a mood of service to Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas, then it will have that powerful effect. There was one girl, devotee girl, she was living in Hong Kong, and she wrote to Srila Prabhupada that she didn't feel to go out on Sankirtan because she wrote to Prabhupada that milk touched by the lips of a serpent has a poisonous effect. So because I'm not pure, when I chant, it won't have a good effect on the people. So Srila Prabhupada wrote back. He said, no, because you are chanting on my order, therefore it will have an effect. Right? So that order of the Parampara to spread the holy name and the chanting of the holy name to the Sankirtan, if we have that mood that we're doing it on the order, right? On the order of the acharyas, then it will have its effect. And what will be the effect? One, people will become attracted, or they'll remember, right? Maybe not immediately, but at some point, they will also take up the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. And that'll be our success. So I'll stop there, and we'll go over today's verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Verse number 28. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 5, entitled Lord Rishabhdev's Teachings, verse 28. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus the great well-wisher of everyone, the Supreme Lord, Rishabhdev, instructed his own sons. Although they were perfectly educated and cultured, he instructed them just to set an example of how a father should instruct his sons before retiring from family life. Sannyasis who are no longer bound by fruitive activity and who have taken to devotional service after all their material desires have been vanquished, also learn by these instructions. Lord Rishabhdev instructed his 100 sons, of whom the eldest, Bharat, was a very advanced devotee and a follower of Vaishnavas. In order to rule the whole world, the Lord enthroned his eldest son on the royal seat. Thereafter, although still at home, Lord Rishabhdev lived like a madman, naked and with disheveled hair. Then the Lord took the sacrificial fire within himself, and he left Brahmavart to tour the whole world. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Actually, the instructions given by Lord Rishabhdev's given to Lord Rishabhdev's sons were not exactly meant for his sons, because they were already educated and highly advanced in knowledge. Rather, these instructions were meant for sannyasis who intended to become advanced devotees. Sannyasis must abide by Lord Rishabhdev's instructions while on the path of devotional service. Lord Rishabhdev retired from family life and lived like a naked madman, even while still with his family. So the point is, we see that Lord Rishabhdev was the king, and the system of government was monarchy. And if you look at the history, generally that was the system. There was a king. The government, right, was headed up by a king. It's more recent history that there's what we call the democracy. However, today that form of government, a democracy, is very much prevalent. Right? But it started maybe a couple of thousand years ago in Greece, was the first democracy, and then Rome. But even today, there are monarchies. In England, they have a king, a queen, right? Although today they don't have any power. The power's been handed over to some other form of government. But Srila Prabhupada mentions that this is actually the best form of government. You have to have an executive head, right? The king is the executive head. And even if you have another form of government, there's still a prime minister, a president, right? The executive head. You don't call him a king, but he executes the same activities. By executing the necessities, the requirements of government, right? The fortunate situation, or the intended situation, was that the king, there would be a king, has to be a king, there has to be an executive head, but he would rule the citizens who, from the platform of being spiritual. It would be a devotee, Raja Rishi, a saintly person, right? And have good qualities of being tolerant, intelligent, humble, right? Raja Rishi. And the citizens would be interested in spiritual life, right? Not just that the king is saintly and the citizens are all rogues and rascals. That's not a good combination, right? It won't work. But when the citizens are following the principles of Varnashram Dharma, you know, and trying to be progressive in spiritual life, and the king is saintly, then everything in the world can be peaceful. Peaceful. You know? Just like Ram Raja. Ram Raja means that all the citizens are devotees of the Lord, and the king is guiding them. Right? Ram Raja. Sometimes the politicians in India, they talk about Ram Raja. We want Ram Raja. Ram Raja ki jai. They want Ram Raja, but they don't want Ram. Right? They want good government minus Ram, which is not possible. Right? The citizens have to be taught, instructed, and guided how to be spiritual, how to be progressive in spiritual life. But today, no government is doing that. They only consider progress is the, you know, the GDP. That is progress. The gross production. Right? How will the economy grow? And everybody's net worth is estimated by how much money they have. He may be a low-class rascal fool, but if he has money, oh, he's a very big man. This is how degraded things become in Kali Yuga. So proper government, we want proper government, but proper government means the people have to be proper. Srila Prabhupada said, in one sense, a democracy means that the leaders are chosen by the people. Leaders chosen by the people. The vote comes from the people. So if the guy is a rascal, cheater, rogue, the people have nobody to blame because they elected him. Right? But why? Why do the cheaters and rogues get elected? Because the people are also cheating. They're also rogues. No good qualities. Right? Not a Dhamma. Maya Pritigyan. So if you have a whole bunch of persons like that, who will they elect? They have no brains. They cannot decide who's fit, who's not fit. So who gets elected? The biggest rogue, the biggest Naradama, the biggest fool and rascal. He gets elected. And then everybody complains. Are they rascal? Cheater? Corrupt? So the whole system is condemned. It's condemned. Srila Prabhupada has explained that the only hope for humanity is this Krishna consciousness movement. Because by distribution of prasadam, by distribution of the holy name, and especially by distribution of transcendental literatures, we can change the character of the people in general. And then there's some hope. If the people become purified, then they'll elect purified leaders. And everything will change. Therefore, ISKCON has a great responsibility to humanity at large. It is the highest welfare activity. Doing so-called social welfare work that's based on the body can't really help anyone. Actual help means to help them spiritually. To help people realize who they are, what is the purpose of life, and how to reestablish their lost relationship with Krishna. Actually, this is the duty of the government. And previously the kings would see to it that the people were being progressive in their spiritual lives. Like Maharaj Yudhisthira, Maharaj Parikshit, the Pandavas. They would see to it that the citizens were properly engaged, spiritually and materially. But the hope is that we'll have peace in the world. But how will there be peace? We see after 60 years of the United Nations, are the nations any more united? Srila Prabhupada explained so many years ago that we see more new and new flags are coming up. So how are they becoming united? They don't understand how people can have peace. Srila Prabhupada gave the peace formula that is explained by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Bhoktaram yajna tapasam savaloka maheshwaram suriram sarvabhutanam gyatvam amsham tirichati. First of all, people have to learn that Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. We are not the enjoyer. We're meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. Our activities are meant to please Him. Then we enjoy. As long as we think that independently we're the enjoyer, we're destined to suffer. Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, the controller of everything that we see, the owner of everything that we see is Krishna. The Supreme Lord, He owns everything. And as His parts and parcels, we can enjoy the Father's property according to our requirement. But always remembering, it's not my property, it's His. Right? Just like the teller in the bank, he's counting lakhs of rupees, right? But all the time he's thinking this is the bank's money. As soon as he starts thinking, mera paisa, wo jail mein dalega. But as long as he's thinking this is the bank's money, he's okay, he's properly situated. Go on counting lakhs, crores, no problem. In the same way, everything belongs to Krishna. Nothing belongs, nirmama, nothing is mine. It's His. On His behalf, I may be managing something. But it all belongs to Him. Suridam sarvabhutanam. That the Supreme Lord, He is the friend of all living entities. Srila Prabhupada used to say, I am your friend. Why? Because I'm telling you that Krishna is your only friend. Krishna. So we can be the friend of everyone if we explain to them who is everyone's friend. Where have we gotten everything from? The air we breathe, the light. It's all coming from Krishna, the supreme friend. So if we keep these things focused, then there can be peace in the world. And if you don't have this formula, there can never be peace. There'll always be quibbling, fighting, wars over the simplest thing. That's the nature of Kali Yuga. If we take our responsibility as devotees very seriously, we can make a difference. Okay? By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have got an opportunity to do devotional service. Devotional service is just like a seed that is sown within the heart. And that seed grows up into a plant. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed Rupa Goswami that what is that plant? It's called the Bhakti Lata. It's the plant or the creeper of devotional service. So that seed gets sown in your heart. By the instructions of the spiritual master, by the mercy of the spiritual master, the seed is sown within the heart. If you just put a seed in the ground, cover it with mud, is anything going to happen? Huh? Nothing is going to happen. If you want that seed to sprout, if you want it to come up, what do you have to do? You have to put water. And so what is the water of the Bhakti Lata Beej? What is that water? Hearing and chanting. Right. To hear the instructions of the spiritual master and to repeat them. Shravanam and Kirtanam. Okay? Now if you do that nicely, then it grows. The Bhakti Lata grows. One has to be careful. If you don't, because sometimes instead of getting the Bhakti Lata beej, you can get some other beej. You can get the karma beej. You can get the gyan beej. You can get the politics beej. You can get the philanthropy beej. All our beaches. the desire for accumulating wealth, right? One has to be careful. So much money is flowing in the Krishna consciousness movement. But just bringing money is not our goal. Yes, we need money to engage in Krishna service, but that's not our goal. It's not that important. Srila Prabhupada said, the spiritual master is not so much happy when a disciple brings money as he is to see that the disciple is chanting the 16 rounds, following the four regulative principles, and making progress in spiritual life. That's more important. So one has to be careful. The karma bij and of the gyan bij, simply acquiring knowledge. Right? I read this book, I read that book, I read Gita Press, I read this press, that press, the Harinam, this. So many books. Huh? Without understanding the purpose, which is to obtain bhakti. Right? I don't need to tell you about the politics speech. Everybody knows about the politics speech. Right? So one has to be very careful not to let these plants come into the heart. Sing Eke Kuru Nandana. Focused. Focused. What is that focus? Fall asleep in the Bhagavatam class? What is the focus? What are we here for? Now, just like the horse has blinders, he can't see this way and he can't see that way, right? We have to become focused. What is our purpose? What is our goal? Right? And why do we want to be focused? Why is it essential that we become focused? So that we can help other people. Bhina Krishna Shakti Nahitar Pravartna. No one can spread the Krishna consciousness movement. No one can become a preacher of Krishna consciousness unless one is empowered. And who is empowered? Who tends to that creeper of devotional service very nicely. That person is empowered. So even if you don't do it for yourself, do it for others. Tend to the creeper of devotional service. Make it grow and grow because it's so powerful. There's so much magic in it that it can grow all the way. And I'm not just preaching to you, I'm preaching to myself. It can grow all the way out of this material world. It can penetrate the coverings of the universe, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, and the biggest covering is ahankar. It's thick. 100 times thicker than all the other coverings is ahankar. False ego. But that bhakti lata can penetrate also the false ego. It can cross the Viraja river. Go past Brahmaloka. Enter into the spiritual planets. Go past all the Vaikuntha planets. And enter into Krishna Loka. And when it enters into Krishna Loka, it spreads like anything. It spreads all over. And it comes to the lotus feet of Krishna, that creeper. So the pure devotees of Krishna, it appears to us like they're managing a movement, or they're sitting in the park with a bongo drum on a rug with a few crazy hippies around them. But actually, they're tending that creeper that's already reached to the spiritual world and is surrounded by the lotus feet of, surrounded by the lotus feet of Krishna and producing so many fruits and flowers. That's their real business. They have two realities going on. The real reality is that their creeper is touched to the lotus feet of Krishna. So we want to enter into that reality. That's what we want to do. That's what we should be desiring. And it seems like a very difficult thing to do. Undoubtedly, it's not easy. But Krishna says, we can do it. Srila Prabhupada says, we can do it. The only thing that's holding us back is that we should want to do it. Lolyam, the desire to attain that perfection, that's the only ticket that we need to purchase that pure devotional service. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita ki jai. Itai Gaur Premanandi.